happened? What happened?
You got shot.
What's your name?
Wake up. What's your name?
Shit.
If there ever was a time, it would be now. That's all I'm saying. If there ever was a time to get on your feet, to take it to the street. Cause you're the one that's getting played right now by the game they're playing. Come on, meet me down at the party park and say, oh, where are the you?
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, as always. We have another great show for you today. I know I say that every week, but I really mean it, and I'm being sincere about it. I think that this is a very informative and entertaining show that we put on for you every week. And we, of course, we really appreciate your support. But our guest today is a returning guest to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, Helena Norberg-Hodge. And Helena is an analyst of the impact of the global economy on cultures and agriculture worldwide. She's a pioneer of the localization movement and the articulator of the core ideas of counter-development. She's producer and co-director of the award-winning documentary, The Economics of Happiness. And personally, I recommend that documentary everywhere I go. Every time I speak, I'm talking about it. And she's the founder and director of the International Society for Ecology and Culture, ISEC. ISEC is based in the U.S. and U.K. with subsidiaries in Sweden, Germany, Australia, and Ladakh. ISEC's mission is to examine the root causes of our social and environmental crises while promoting more sustainable and equitable patterns of living in both North and South. Its activities include the Economics of Happiness, the Ladakh Project, a local food program, and global-to-local outreach. Helena, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
It's good to have you back on. We really admire your work and your documentary. But am I right? Are you in Australia today?
I am in Australia. That's where I'm living, far, far away.
Uh-huh, from us at least.
So anyway,
we're talking to you because you're having a conference here about the economics of happiness in Berkeley, California. But before we get into that and you tell us about your conference, can you tell us what you think about the Occupy movement and especially how it's related to your movement, the localization movement?
Yes, absolutely. I think the Occupy movement, as I'm sure you do too, is just the most exciting and encouraging thing that we've seen for a very long time. And it's very much related to what we're about. In my organization, you know, we've been saying for years that it's less than 1% of the global population that's promoting policies that are destructive to the 99% of the global population, but also threatening our very survival because of the impact on the environment. We are also very clear about the fact that the corporate rule that we have now, from my native country of Sweden to India to China and to the U.S., it's the corporate rule, the big banks and corporations behind the scenes that are really pulling the strings. We have this insane redundant trade where things are being flown back and forth. You know, apples are being flown also from England to be washed in South Africa and flown back again.
Oh, wow.
Corporate global economy is the main reason for global warming and other environmental crises. So we're promoting the understanding that in really seeing how the corporations gain so much power over our governments, it's the globalization of the economy. It's the deregulation of trade and finance that's the main problem. So we very much hope to join with the Occupy movement, and there will be people from that at our conference, to spell out that what we need to do immediately is to localize economic activity to the greatest extent possible, particularly starting with food, which is, of course, the only thing human beings produce that every single person on the planet needs every single day. So having that food from closer to home obviously makes sense. I could say a lot more, but I'm not monologuing too much.
Yeah. No, it's okay. I just want you to tell us, what do you hope that your collaboration with the Occupy movement here in the U.S. will do to address those issues?
Well, I think, you know, what I've been saying is that I think that once we get a very clear signal, which the Occupy movement is sending now, that even in the Western countries, even within the U.S., the majority of people are being marginalized and impoverished by so-called economic growth. By keeping this system going, people are getting poorer. Once that message gets out and it gets linked to the environmental concerns, it gets linked to the concern, as you have shown, to the war machine and how the war machine is part of protecting corporate interests. It's not about our needs. It's not about our need for oil. It's about the corporate machine's need for oil. So once we start linking that, those issues, to understand that every single person who is working at this stage, and thank goodness there are still so many millions of people who are, working to make the world a better place, whether concerns are mainly about the environment or mainly about poverty or about peace instead of war, once we link hands to focus on economic change, I think we'll see, you know, there's this huge, the movement multiply and grow very, very rapidly.
Well, and we see, you talked about the, you know, connection to war and how the 1% or the less than 1% actually are the ones that benefit from war. They don't have to sacrifice for war. What do you think about, especially here in the United States? Well, we can look at the United States and we can look at Greece, for example, the oppression by the police and military of these protests. And in the United States, I, you know, have to say that the protests have been more than 99% peaceful, but they've been violently, you know, oppressed by the police state. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm afraid that this is definitely happening, and which is why I would argue that the most important thing about the Occupy movement is to keep the vision and the ideas alive, to keep a clear message going, and why it's so important, you know, that you have radio, because we have to recognize that the dominant media are part of the problem, and so we need alternative media. We need everyone to realize that they can be an information activist. They can get this understanding out so that, as I say, so that there's a linking of hands across, not just across the social and environmental divide. And this divide, by the way, you know, is created by the corporate agenda, which pretends that those who are concerned with the environment are elitists who don't care about the fact that we need growth to reduce poverty, that we need large-scale industrial farming to feed the world. You know, all kinds of myths prop this system up and keep us divided. So we've got to see through that and have a more holistic view. And I do think our film can help people to start seeing those linkages so that we can link hands. And even across the right and left, across the Democrat and conservative divide, many of the conservatives are absolutely fed up with government bureaucracy, government waste. And of course, that's true. There is a reason to be fed up with that, but they need to recognize that the real problem is that they're in the pockets of the giant banks and corporations, and that we have to see, understand the system in order to change it. And I do think that the localization or decentralization that's so essential for environmental reasons, but also to allow literally millions of smaller businesses to flourish, billions of jobs to be available. You know, the job scarcity is completely artificial. There is no job scarcity in reality. I think once people see that, as I say, we'll see, you know, this linking of hands that's essential to make real change. I think, and to make real change, you know, we are also in the film spelling out that you can start right now at the local level. So you can already start joining the localization movement and prove that it's possible to support farmers to diversify and sell closer to home, and that this can increase their profit while it reduces the price of healthy food to you, the consumer. You can actually be part of a movement that creates more jobs and more community. So I think with our film and now the conference, I think we are bringing together those what has been, you know, divided, these diverse movements, into this umbrella of looking at the economy, at changing the economy. And again, the Occupy movement has been, you know, we mustn't despair at the fact that this sort of police state terrorism really is trying to break it up. We must rejoice in the fact that they managed to get this message out to so many people. We must rejoice in the fact that so many people were supportive of the movement. And I think we have to find a way of having it live on in every local community, in every home, in everybody's minds, so that it may not be necessary to have people sleeping out in the cold and snow to keep this movement alive. It shouldn't be necessary.
Right, and the one thing I like about, well, I like a lot of you know, things about the Occupy movement, but the thing that I like is it is decentralized and it has been tailored by necessity to you know, respond to the needs of the local community, not necessarily, you know, in a national political way, but since it is decentralized, that it is so diverse. And it is focusing, many of them are focusing on local issues, whether their immediate needs, as preventing someone from being foreclosed on, or working on things that might be more of a long-term solution. So I'm glad that you, you know, gave us your thoughts about that. And
I just wanted to say that localization is synonymous with decentralization. That's really...
Yes.
It's another word for the same thing, and that is exactly what it allows, is for greater diversity and greater empowerment of more people rather than hierarchical systems.
And I'm glad that you contacted me about this conference, and I just want to tell you that I'm probably one of your biggest cheerleaders over here whenever I speak, because I speak about these issues, and I have been for probably like you know, at least the last 3 or 4 years now, is I talk about the movie, and I recommend, if people haven't seen it, that, you know, even though my audiences are really smart and they're really aware of a lot of things, and a lot of people have seen the film, but I always tell people that, you know, that this is the direction that we need to be going in. So tell my listeners and me about the upcoming Economics of Happiness Conference in Berkeley. Is this something you do around the world? And then you can give specifics of this conference.
We have done conferences before around the world, but it's hard, of course, to raise funding. And sometimes people feel these days, you know, it's not important. But we have always felt that it's particularly important to get across this divide between the so-called developed and the developing world, because there's so many myths about how, you know, in China and India, they need more fossil fuels and should be allowed to keep polluting longer because it would be unjust to ask them to reduce CO2 emissions. There are all kinds of myths that are really about the corporate need to produce over there where labor is cheaper. And, of course, that's taking our jobs away from us, and it's creating vastly more pollution. So this dialogue between the developed and the developing world is something that we have tried to encourage over now 3 decades, because we've been working, you know, both in the so-called developing world and in the developed world. So that's what this conference is about, once again bringing people together from around the world. And the conference starts on the 22nd in Berkeley with a film showing, with our film and another very important film, Schooling the World. It shows how even the schools are part of the problem, something that's hard for people to see in the West. But in the third world, it's very clear that the schools become a way of training people essentially for these jobs as in the factories and corporate system, and that they you know, they're eradicating literally tens of thousands of years of knowledge about their own ecosystem, their own culture, their own history. So it becomes part of the problem. Anyway, that's the film, Schooling the World and Economics of Happiness, will be on the evening of the 22nd. And then we have, starting Friday evening, the conference, and with people like Charles Eisenstein, you might have heard of, and Annie Leonard of The Story of Stuff, as well mm-hmm. as people like Manish Jain from India, Anuradha Mittal, Sulak Sivaraksa, he's a leader, he's from Thailand, and he's a leader in the engaged Buddhist movement. One of the things that we've always been about is understanding the need for paying attention to the personal inner life, the psychological and spiritual dimension, at the same time as we develop and strengthen our political and economic activism. So again, we feel this bridging of the personal and spiritual and the political and economic is absolutely crucial. You know, you may have found that too. There's been a tendency for people to think, well, we could, you know, peace starts with myself, and therefore I'll only focus on meditating and my own spiritual journey. And very often that's made people apathetic politically. And on the other hand, you know, we've had activists who have become completely burned out because they haven't paid attention to their need for quieting the mind and for having, you know, for paying attention to that inner peace, which will give them the joy and the power to continue with their work. So the conference, well, I think, is unique in that way.
Uh-huh. Okay, you just had elections. Well, Australia just had elections. And if you haven't, in case you haven't heard, there's elections coming up in the United States. You know, for the manager of what I call, you know, the CEO of the empire. And I truly believe that the president of the United States is actually selected by the 1%. And it doesn't matter if the Republican or Democrat wins, the agenda of the 1% is going to be furthered. And, you know, I don't know. To me, I don't get too involved in these federal political things because I think they have very little effect on our lives that we can do more locally. What is your thoughts? Yes. What are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree. And it becomes, I think, particularly clear when you see it internationally. Because the same thing has happened, you know, in Sweden and in India, and I think you're absolutely right. We've got to start, I think the economic literacy that we're talking about is understanding that this concentration of big banks and corporations, the 1% that inhabits those, that are the leaders in those, are the ones who are pulling the strings and, yes, electing our leaders across the world. So once we realize that more clearly, it's a very different agenda. We've got to build up a movement that will articulate this very clearly and that will put in place new representatives or force the current representatives to represent us instead of this invisible economic hand. And that could be done, you know, with more alert understanding of what's actually going on. It could be done, and I do think that within a very short period, if we could focus more on raising awareness about what's actually happening, and I agree, you know, if people really understood what was happening, they would not be investing so much energy in the elections as they're currently being run. And we've seen again and again that as people are on the election tour, they speak our language because they're trying to get our votes, the 99% vote.
Absolutely.
But in actual fact, once they're in power, we see who the real power is. And so this, if we understand that clearly, we will be demanding fundamental change. And for me, it is, you know, one of the first things is an immediate re-regulation of the global economic activity. That means regulating the giants instead of over-regulating small local business. It's a bit technical, but this is one of the points that most people do not pay attention to and do not understand, and that is that worldwide, our activities as individuals and smaller local businesses, even national businesses, are being strangled by bureaucracy and red tape, Anyway, I could say so much about it. They're being strangled and overregulated. This often leads them to become right-wing, to want what they believe is the way forward, which is a laissez-faire, free-trade economy. And they don't understand that we've got to, again, spell out this difference between the giant players at the global level versus the smaller local and national players.
Well, Helena, of course, your movie and your work is doing a lot in this education piece. And if my listeners wanted more information about the conference here in the States in Berkeley, California, how could they find out more information about that?
Thank you. If they could go to The Economics of Happiness, all one word, theeconomicsofhappiness.org, theeconomicsofhappiness.org, they'll find all the information there on the website. There's a full program and so on. And we do also, for activists and so on, we have reduced rates. So if you're interested, please do contact us.
Okay, Helena, bye-bye. Thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Helena Norberg Hodge of The Economics of Happiness. Well, that was our show today. I hope you learned something. I hope you were inspired. I hope you go to Helena's website. And if you haven't seen the movie, I highly recommend it. It's inspiring and informative at the same time. Well, as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, my guest, Helena, you listeners for listening and supporting the show. And I'd also like to say that I am going to Ireland and Sweden for the next 2 weeks. I'll be doing peace work and solidarity with the Cuban Five. If you don't know who the Cuban Five are, then I'm surprised because you're a listener of this show, but Google the Cuban Five and find out about their case. But for the next 2 weeks, I'm very excited to announce that Cynthia McKinney, our longtime Soapbox friend and courageous campaigner for peace and social justice, will be substituting for me. So stay tuned for the next 2 weeks. I'm Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out.